The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham, and happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you have great plans, and if you are already headed home, I guarantee you are stuck in traffic. It is, even coming down here at this a little earlier, the show starts at 3 o'clock, and it's just traffic. And again, hopefully, we had John Dombrowski from Grand Canyon Planning on earlier. We were talking about a lot of the movement that's happening with the finances, the way our economy, the reports that are coming out. All these economic indicators point that there's going to be continued success and growth in this economy. And it's pretty obvious. You're seeing record traveling numbers at this particular point. You're seeing the malls packed. You're seeing retail online packed. There's this great image I saw. Actually, if you go to Drudge Report, there's an image in the top left corner, and it shows some Amazon warehouse workers. And they're actually terrified that they won't be able to keep up with the package delivery now. It's not that they don't have the demand. It is overwhelming. If you see this photo, it's interesting because it literally is like ceiling to floor in these great big warehouses, wall to wall of packages that are stuffed. And they've got to transport these. And so my guess is that you're going to see a lot of UPS. You'll see a lot of FedEx. You'll see Amazon-specific vehicles. But then you're going to see a lot of cars just showing up at your house that have no markings. And they're going to be getting a lot of people to drive and deliver. And again, this is back to the promotion and stimulation of our economy, right? We talk about good economic policy, and we'll touch on a little bit of that. I've been talking about Russia, Iran, and China and their unusual alliance that they've formed, but actually they're formalizing in a very aggressive way, which is a little bit unnerving, and it should be unnerving for the rest of the world when you see those kind of allegiances and then you see them planning these war games together. But then you shift. We were talking about Russia and nations trying to influence elections, and they do it through communication, right? And they get to this point where we push through the communication. So I want to talk about elections in the sense of consumerism. See, not enough people tie these together. And think about it in this sense, okay? So you've heard all these people come out and they say, oh, yeah, they're listening to our social media. They're listening to our phones. And if I talk about jeans, all of a sudden an ad shows up on my phone or my social media handles here. And then I start looking. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, they're listening to everything. And they're finding us. Yes, they are. Okay. What they're doing is they are watching your behavior, right? You are allowing people, when you have location services, you accept them. When you let them drop a cookie on there, or they have something called pixeling. And then when you're on phones, if your location services are on, and most people have them on, I have them on, people are throwing a net over your universe every single day, trying to figure out who you are, who you talk to, what you do, what your consumer behaviors are, and everything. So you can think, if you're Nike and you want to sell some shoes to female athletes, let's say they're runners, for instance, you want to know who those people are. Where do they frequent? Who do they talk to? How much income do they have? What's their demographic? Can you find their height, eye color, hair color? Anything that is in the public domain, people can extract it in a very aggressive way. Now, I'm going to tell you about a software. This will creep you out. Now, the reason I bring this up and I talk about consumerism, think about these nations that have an investment, so to say, in trying to influence elections all across the world. If people think the United States hasn't tried to influence other people's elections, well, maybe peel the aluminum foil off the top of your head and the saran wrap off of your face, because it's time to breathe and it's time to listen and learn, because the reality is it's happening, okay? So when you get down to it, people consume votes like they buy products, right? Who do you like? Do you follow NASCAR? Do you have a favorite driver? Do you follow football? Do you have a favorite quarterback or running back or How about hockey? Do you have a favorite goalie? Do you have a favorite forward? Who's the center of the Red Wings? Is that your guy in the starting lineup? Who knows? But you follow these individuals, right? And you consume the information. You think about people that are sports fans that maybe a specific sport, and they can quote every single statistic about something. Well, there's political fans too, right? They start to learn who these congressmen and women are. They look at their voting records. They look at their track records. They do all this. They have interests. And they have issues that they care about. Well, what happens is as you are out there chatting away, whether you're using a free email service like Google or Hotmail, I think it's still out there, MSNBC's deal, all these things, you are putting information into the public domain, whether you believe it or not. Okay. And so when you put that information out, you're starting to define over and over again who you are. Have you ever answered the question on Facebook, what your favorite book is? How about your favorite movie? Oh, do you work out? What kind of workouts do you do? Do you ride a mountain bike? Okay. Do you like canoeing? Do you like wine tasting? Every time you define something like this, you're being tagged as somebody that fits in a specific category. And you start to create these categories. Now, this is happening at a mass scale. So when Cambridge Analytica came out and got smacked around for pulling this data from Facebook, Facebook gave it to them, right? They sold it to them. And so Cambridge Analytica was doing consumer models around voting in elections, which is happening everywhere. But Cambridge Analytica was really successful at doing it and putting it together. So they got popped because somebody had to get popped because there was supposed meddling somewhere. And so it is what it is. Okay, they were demonized for information, but every single day this is happening. And they're capturing information. So here's, I'm not going to mention, like I said, the name of this software, but I just want to give you an idea of creepiness, okay, that's out there. If you have any public social media, which a lot of people have forward-facing social media. You have location services on your phone. You've engaged with the world, and you've given them information. Okay, so a friend of mine, one of the most brilliant individuals I've ever encountered, and he is a tech guru. He's built hundreds of millions of dollars of companies. Like one company, I think when he was done with the company, I think he cashed out like $500 million. So I'm not talking about little consumer apps that somebody whips together in their basement. Okay. These are real enterprise applications. So this guy has taken his life and he's just trying to find his spot. Well, he creates this software, and for lack of better words, it is a software that was designed to help people meet other people. So not a dating app, but one that gave you a little bit of a critical insight on an individual before you walk up to introduce yourself to these individuals. And so to give you an idea, what you could do, let's say you're in a bar, say you're in a restaurant, let's say you're somewhere where you know that person is likely single and available. You snap a picture of this individual. Facial recognition trolls through all the public domains, social media handles and whatever else is out there in the public domain, with that face, and it finds the individual. Okay, so let's say it's Facebook or it's Instagram. Let's say you are a guy looking for a lady. All of a sudden, you see that she walked her dog, did a selfie with her dog at 8 a.m. this morning, and it was a white Newfoundland. I don't know what kind of dog it is. But anyways, you got it, right? 8 a.m. If you like dogs, you might want to walk up and say, hey, were you walking your dog this morning at 8 a.m. around this place? I drove past and saw you, right? Well, yeah, you're in. The conversation started, and it's better than Hitch, if you've ever seen that movie Hitch. This is like the game changer, right? It's there. And so, but what happened because of facial recognition, public domain, all the expression, people put everything about themselves out there, you have this notion. So this is a manipulation of data, right? Maybe not the most authentic approach in the world, but it gave people a window into a potential relationship, like wham. So think about if you are a spy, if you're intelligence, if you're doing things, this type of stuff happens, right? When you walk through public domains, they're snapping pictures. Ever cross the border down in Sonoyta going near Lukeville, going into Rocky Point? How many times are your pictures taken before you cross over the border? Probably five times, four times maybe. And on the Mexican side of the border, they've started taking pictures as well. So now it's both. And then when you exit, they take pictures as well. So whatever they do with those that information they archive, they're starting to, it's a data compilation, right? So there's new strategies that are out there because Facebook is a community. You have Instagram's a community, and it even gets more sub-community when people say, yeah, look, I'm a cowboy. So now they follow Western stuff, and they start to define themselves into that rural kind of country community. Or if they're NASCAR, they follow NASCAR, action sports, cosmetics, there's like makeup channels, there's all these things that people start to isolate, and they're starting to further define who they are. So it makes it easier for people to market to them. It is exactly the same way with anybody that has access to the web, access to those regions of information to target you. Now, why would it be any different to get you to start to vote for somebody else? You start to align interests and you do it. It's crazy. Now, there's a whole notion of geo-targeting, geolocation. And every time I say those words to IT people, and just so you know, I do a lot of consulting in the space of artificial intelligence coupled with all these data components. Geofencing, geo-targeting, they call it influence and control, which is not PC by any stretch of the imagination. And I've been doing these things, and fascinating, with governments all the way down to marketing agencies and specific brands. And when you come back, I want to tell you, do they know where you sleep? And because they know where you sleep, what do they know about you? Okay, it's not just looking your name up in a phone book and saying, there they are. It's what is the behavior around what we would consider your digital footprint or your fingerprint for that matter, because it's unique and special to you. So what do they know? How do they use it? And what are you going to expect when you're playing Angry Birds at night, or you're playing Candy Crush and all of a sudden ads start to pop up in front of you that are very relevant? Find out why, and why they know more about you this cycle than ever before after the break. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham, and you're listening to 960 The Patriot. I'm filling in for my good friend Seth Leibson, and hopefully you are having a fantastic day. If you're joining us right now, thanks for joining. If you are back with us, thanks for staying tuned. Dolly Parton, she's one of my favorites. That's a great show. If you have never seen that movie, 9 to 5 with Dolly Parton, it is a wild and crazy movie and just brings back some good memories. And I, you know, it's funny because I pull up some of these movies and I think that, my kids are going to love these. And then you realize how low tech we were. It doesn't have all the wild and crazy effects and stuff. And I lose them in like the first 10 minutes about every movie that I thought was great when I was a kid. So it just tells you more. Again, back to Snap, Crackle, and Pop. That is the theme of the day. And that is Bones and Neck Cranks. Every time I move, I get a little Snap, Crackle, Pop. Going into the break, I teased you hard with what kind of information do people know about you and how they get the information. So one thing that you're going to hear a lot about, and I'm not going to go into everything today, but I want to just give you an idea, okay? How private do you want to be? And the hardest thing today when it comes to information out there, it's hard to maintain your privacy, okay? So the reality is, and this is one of the things that I talk to my kids about, I've trained people on everything, is don't do anything that you don't want to see on the front page of the newspaper. Don't say anything that you would be embarrassed if somebody else hears. Don't post pictures that you believe are private, because I guarantee you, especially coming from a political world, they're not private and they're going to find their way, especially the ones that would be more damning to your life and disrupt your forward motion. Those pictures, those comments, those things will come back to haunt you, I promise. But the reality is that people are archiving, they're learning, they're doing things. So geotargeting, as it relates to Facebook and some of the other social media tools, were so neat, right? We could go and say, well, I want to target all these people that live in a geographic area. We used to do that longhand where we'd grab geocodes and we would use zip codes and we'd say, okay, target this area with mail and what have you, and we'd go get them. Social media has advanced to now where we can literally have a map, right? We take a little pin, we drop it in the map, it shows a circle and says, okay, do you want to get people 5 miles, 10 miles, 25 miles, and what happened? And then you can further isolate it. You can say you want conservative people, people that support Trump, people that are big, free market folks, and back and forth and stuff. And you start to define what's going to sit in this little circle. The more definition you get, the smaller the population becomes, because you're getting more granular in the way that you want to market to somebody or to communicate with them with some message. And so they called that geo-targeting, geolocating, geo-targeting. Now, there's been something that's even more common that you see is, like, if you use GPS, if you use Waze, if you use Google Maps or some of the other mapping software that's out there, and you're driving along All of a sudden it says, pull over Dunkin' Donuts and grab a coffee and donuts because you're 2 seconds from them and use this ad. You look up and there they are right in front of you. How in the world did they work that out? Well, it's called a geofence or geoboundary. Okay, so what's happened is because you have Waze or you have one of these other apps, when you cross a specific border or line that is literally coming from the satellites, right? That's GPS driven. They draw a line on a map and they say, when you cross that line, serve them this ad because that's the ideal time to do it. If somebody clicks on the ad, there's certain points and score into that. If they drive up to the store and consume, well, they try to keep track of it, especially if they're using coupons and such. Now it's evolved to the next layer. That one was cool, right? But you had to have an agent. And then when I say agent on your phone, if you're an AMC theater person and you have AMC stubs on your phone, when you drive into a parking lot nearby one of those places, they tell you, oh, look, there's this cool movie playing today. And it reminds you, get these promptings. There's other things, maybe grocery stores and gas stations. You pull in and they, you know, they pop up a little ad trying to pull you into that facility to consume. All that's called geolocation, geotargeting, geofencing, right? So now it's evolved to this next level. And beyond. The next level is I'll give you a perfect example. So one of our clients has it's a beverage company, and they wanted to target NASCAR. Now, NASCAR, they don't need to have this relationship with NASCAR to do what I'm about to tell you. They just got to know where people are going to be and people that are likely going to consume their beverage, right? So what you do is you craft a target zone, which literally takes 5 minutes maximum, maybe less, to draw a line around all the parking lots and the speedways, okay, that are right there on a map right in front of your face. And then what happens is you close this little target, this fence, and anybody that drives into that space and they have an active phone that's called lit phone, they're talking on it, the phone's on, they're looking at it, it scrapes IDs off their phone. So they know that phone. They don't have to have you download an app or go to a website and do it. They've got an IP or an address, an ID on that person. There's also tools that do it when it's dark. The phone's not lit. It can't be powered off, but they may not be looking at it. But if it's on, they grab the same ID. Now, here's the cool thing. So those are target zones. Now what they do is they got you. Okay, they got about 500,000 to 700,000 apps that they work with. So if you open up Candy Crush and you get an ad, well, Candy Crush is an affiliate. If you open up, Chemistry 101 app and an ad pops up, that's the affiliate ad. So it doesn't matter the quality of the app because the ad agency or the client's only going to pay if an ad gets served to somebody. So it doesn't matter what the application. So the more that they affiliate with, the better. High quality, low quality, doesn't matter if it's a naughty site or not. It doesn't matter. If they open it up and they have an affiliation and the ad pops up and says, go to Circle K and buy this beverage and do it. So now what happens is around the Circle K's or the Fry's or the Albertsons or wherever the beverage might be, you draw a different kind of fence around there and they call that conversion zones. So now what happens is if somebody gets served an ad, you see it, okay, you scrape their ID, and then if they drive across town or a couple blocks away and they go into it because the ad entices them to go in, when they cross into that front door or into that driveway, they've been converted. They've crossed into conversion zone. Marketers, forever we've wanted to know, does our stuff really work? Or is it just because the economy's doing well? Or is it this, what have you? This you know. At least you have a very high probability, probably as close as 85% know that it's your ad that drove those people to that place. So now you get to report back to the clients and say, look, they were here targeted. They were served this many ads. And then they were converted. We have a document, the conversion zone, the ID association with it, and whatever. People's names are still pretty much not included, okay? So they still keep some anonymity in that sense, okay? Now, the next stage of evolution is creepy. So because that ID is identifying them as they kind of move around, okay, people aren't watching everywhere they're going, but they do pay attention to where people sleep at night, okay? So if they see that a phone has resided at a specific location, 95% of the time the last 30 days, likely you live there. Okay, guess what is generally public domain is who lives in that house. Okay, so if they grab my house and they say Robert Graham, likely it's Robert Graham's phone or Julia Graham's phone, then what they do is they can pull public data off my name. They go, you know, think about the tools that extract from Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all these things. And all of a sudden, now they have a full file on you. Oh, favorite movie's Rudy? Oh, that's great. There it is. Okay. So they've got it. Now, imagine the type of targeting and strategy they can do. And they can report back to their beverage company and say, oh, by the way, here's the cluster of all the people that drink your drink or that are moved by that ad, and this is where you should target so that you can increase sales even more. It's crazy, but now translate that into voting. Intensity, propensity, all these things are things that are going to influence people. When we come back, I'll touch on some of those keys, and then we're going to talk about the Democratic candidates. Happy days ahead. Talk to you back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for staying with us over the break, and we're still having fun. I just kind of lit your hair on fire a little bit with all the data dynamics, and this is just one element of data interaction. It is not when you start talking about third-party data management platforms and consumer data platforms, I mean, you get to a point where it's remarkable in a way how much people are willing to share. And, you know, you hear about all these dirtbags that send emails and do things called phishing, and they get you to give up information like your social security numbers and account numbers and things like that. And then they use it to drain bank accounts and just do some unscrupulous identity theft type stuff. Those same tactics are used by marketers to just gather more personal information. And what happens is when you engage, it's okay. Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but you've got to understand that when you are giving up information, likely you're giving it to a broader audience than the person that's asking, okay? So just have a better perspective as it relates to it. Because there's sometimes you want people to have more information. Maybe you have a particular site or some retailer that you really appreciate, and you want them to send you offers and do things, and they're going to try to learn your behavior a little bit and send it. If you've ever gone on Pinterest, Pinterest is a perfect example. So Pinterest, you go on and say, you know, a lot of people, my sons tease me because I'm like a Pinterest guy, okay? I've got a ton of boards, all this kind of stuff. And they think, oh, Dad, you're just looking at crafts. Well, go on to Pinterest and put firearms in there. Put cool cars. Put in 1977 Mustang and see what comes up. You're going to be shocked at how there's so much information on there that's relevant to you. But then what happens is when you log on, it comes to your homepage and there's all this stuff for you to look at, and you just kind of troll through it. And it's mixed. It is stuff that you've already indicated somewhere that you were interested in it. And then there's other things. But if you click on something, like, for instance, I do jiu-jitsu, and one of the things that we wear under our gis when we're training is something called a rash guard. I mean, it's a tight shirt, like an Under Armour shirt or something like that you might wear. And when I click on anything to do with rash guards, then the next time I log into Pinterest, usually there's four or five different recommendations that are rash guards, okay? So they are watching my click behavior to make the information they serve up to me relevant, and which is ultimately going to lead to what? More consumer purchases and what have you. If I buy through Pinterest, they get a cut. So they have incentive for those people that are posting and doing things, advertisers and such, to help their product along. So that's how they do it. Now think about in the sense of voting and consumerism. Okay, so back in the day, there was an organization that I knew well that actually created a game. If you remember, Facebook used to have games on them a lot where you could sign on. It was something Tower. It was Obama and Romney, and they were going through a maze. And what would happen is you would be the player. You select which one you want to be. So do you think that's telling anybody that wants to advertise to you? You say, I want to be Obama. Well, then likely you're probably an Obama person and a Romney. Now, to verify this, as people are going through, there were questions had to do with Second Amendment, life issues, things like that. But they were very, very, they were camouflaged, right? In a way where it was kind of fun for you to play the game. And if you hit a dead end and you had to make a decision, another question came up. And by the time people got through this, they got almost 2,000 points of data on that individual. Well, guess what? You start telling people what you like and what you desire as outcomes. The messages, again, hopefully they're authentic and they're legitimate messages, start to position to align with your needs. So now all of a sudden, Romney, in that case, became a better candidate to people. Or Obama, in that case, became better candidates. Also, the group that was doing it was a more conservative group. So if they started to identify really what moved people to like Obama, they would drive a wedge into that information. Okay, not dishonestly, but just distract the user, right? Make it so that they wouldn't have the same kind of intimacy along the way. So again, it is definition, it's information, it's something called intensity. We look at momentum behind things. We look at people's motivations. You start to learn their socioeconomic backgrounds and such. We have a client that is in the pizza world, and they've had an interesting experience the last few years, and they're trying to understand why they have three multiple instances of this, but they have three markets that demographically line up, pricing lines up, competitive landscape lines up, all of the demographic income and stuff all line up. And they're trying to figure out what's different in each of their environments that are making one store profitable, one barely breaking even, and one going into the toilet. So we're helping them define what's different in the environment. And the word that people use that is changing a bit now is called surveillance. They're trying to find a happier word that doesn't freak people out, but through radio, documentation, anything online, they are surveilling. And they're trying to figure out behavior. So it's a remarkable time right now. But be positioned to have a good feel for what's public domain for you and what you're comfortable with, because you need to protect yourself, especially if you want to maintain more privacy and have more direction. Again, this is Robert Graham. We'll be right back after the break with the Democratic candidates. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham, and you are listening to 960 Patriot. Welcome back, everybody that's been tuned in, and those that are just joining us. We've been talking a lot about political marketing, consumer marketing, quite honestly, and data as it relates to how available data is and how some strategic data managers will tie knots together and find their way to as much that they possibly can as it relates to you, your habits, your behavior, and really the things that help you to make a decision. And of course, they want you to buy their goods and services, and that rolls right into politics. And I would tell you that politics is becoming more and more consumer driven as it relates to their strategies behind marketing and the way that they talk to campaigns and they talk to all of us. We've got Dan Holding from Scottsdale. Dan, hey, welcome. Thanks for holding on. I know you wanted to chat a little bit about political direct mail. You there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay, great. My question involves what I lovingly refer to as the Vigory crap, named after Richard Vigory. It's the jived up official poll member of your precinct and congressional district. And I mean, they've been, you know, Richard Vigory invented this stuff in the 70s. I'm old enough to remember it. And I'm just wondering where this fits in with what you've been talking about.
As far as, say it again, you broke up just a little bit when you were asking part of your question.
Okay, well, there's direct mail that was originated in the 1970s with a guy named Richard Vigory.
Yeah, I still
get it from time to time, quite frequently, actually. And my question is, how does that kind of archaic, kind of, it's kind of a fake survey, it's really a fundraising tool, how does that fit in with what you're talking about today?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I'm looking right now as we're talking here and trying to get some direct examples that may relate specifically to his efforts. But when you do these surveys or fake surveys, remember that information, when it rolls around in people's heads, they become familiar with it, whether it's accurate or not. You know, unions are guilty as all get out. There's a great book called Stranglehold, and it talks about how a lot of times that they will purposely broadcast misinformation because they know that it gets in people's heads, gets them fired up, and gets them emotionally involved and engaged. And then when you turn to some of the others with the surveys and stuff, so they call them, there's people that call them push polls and things like that, and they load the question in a way that it gets in your head. So, for instance, they may say, how do you feel about this candidate? And this candidate is a person that's been investigated by the FBI, and they've been up for impeachment, and is 70-plus years old, and whatever. The other candidate is a male as well, but – has been recognized as a successful business entrepreneur, is a great family person, and blah, 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 blah. Which one do you like? And then the information that comes out is, of course, they like the second picture better because it feels good and it's right. But then that person will then take that poll and say 75% of the respondents like Buttigieg or whatever, you know, Buttigieg and his deal versus Donald Trump. And they'll say in the 1,000 respondents, bipartisan response or what have you, but it's a push poll. And so, but what happens, that's the evidence. That's the information that starts to roll around people's heads and starts to move the public domain. So the unfortunate reality is it is almost impossible to stop people from data manipulation. We've watched it with climate control people or global warming people. We've watched it with about any argument that people can use statistics for. They'll do it and they'll manipulate it and push it. So it plays a part in everything. That's why when if you look at our lawmakers, and one of the big divides that we have with the public is they feel like they only grasp single issues a lot of times. They're the champion of a single issue, and they don't go too deep, and we get unhappy with some of their voting. We as voters have to become educated as best we possibly can to filter some of this nonsense and look at the questions and say, these are loaded. There's things in the, and I think I've talked about in the show before, called social pressure pieces too, that just wreck people. And it gets people to do things that they normally wouldn't do. And it may be actually a positive thing, but it's disruptive to say the least. So it plays a huge part in our day-to-day elections now, and it puts more onus back on us to try to filter through the noise. And unfortunately, the noise is hitting us so frequently that it's hard to filter. So hopefully that answers your question, Dan. I don't know if I addressed it perfectly, but anything else you want to follow on?
Well, the stuff that I'm referring to is mailed by, say, the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. And my fear is not so much with the Trump campaign. I know they're fairly very social media savvy, but some of the other Republican organizations, I'm just afraid they're behind the times.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Okay, so when I was chairman of the Arizona State Party, that was one of my biggest frustrations, and I have no problem saying it now. I kind of bit my tongue when I was chairman, but I was pressed to use a data system that the Republican National Committee was behind, and they were supporting it, and I found out later that there wasn't a lot of integrity behind what they were trying to do. But there was other interests besides just data. And they wanted me to use a system that didn't have the data that I needed, that I believed I needed to win elections. There was another group that was out there that had a system that I believed had it. And historically, statewide, anyways, it was remarkable data, candidly. So I went toe-to-toe. I didn't get virtually any support from the RNC or what have you as it related to fundraising or things like that, because I would not adopt what they wanted us to adopt from a data system because it was inferior. And quite honestly, if people stay with this, I'll tell a story after the break that I have not told publicly. So it'll be the first time, and I might get my face punched in by a few people after I tell the story, but it's worth it. But what had happened was the data was so stale and so old. We just didn't. I mean, how do you communicate? We talk about social media, but then you talk about mail, and we didn't even have relevant data. And so, to make the argument, what you're saying is yeah, they get so tied down to what I would call traditional processes and systems that we don't innovate enough, and we're not finding our way to the emotional side of things. Look, Republicans we're logical. We're sensible. I should say conservatives are logical. They're sensible. They look at cells on spreadsheets and they say, look, we can balance this if we just do X, Y, and Z. But what happens is we forget to incorporate the why, the emotional dynamic around it. Look, if you want to take pressure off your life, do this. Okay, pressure off my life sounds really good. Tying the two together. So your intuition about kind of missing the boat is we're having a hard time tying those two things together, and we are behind. And it's scary because the best thing about this election cycle right now on the Democrat side is they don't know what to do. They're so confused right now as far as a candidate, as far as a message, do we talk about socialism, Medicaid for all? Do we talk about, killing the cows and stop flying airplanes? I mean, they don't know what to talk about right now and what's relevant. So at this particular juncture, when I come back, I'll tell you a little story about kind of that establishment that likes status quo. And if we don't evolve, then we're doomed. And we saw this happen in Colorado where Colorado was a bright red state, and now it is a really blue state. It is one that we have to contend with now, and we never should have gotten to that place because we didn't evolve with the technology, the communication, the capacity, the emotion, all the stuff that goes into consumerism around the votes. Democrats' alignment with Hollywood was a helpful move for them. Not even the stars, just the way to communicate in an emotive way to pull people along. I'm not suggesting we're going to lose this election, but I got to tell you, we've got a lot more than just the presidency on the hook. So we'll be right back after this break. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham. We just had a caller call in, Dan from Scottsdale, and he was talking about political marketing, direct marketing, and different tactics that have been used historically, and really people's techniques and such. And one of the other questions along with it was, are we behind it? Are we keeping pace? I mean, there was a time where conservative direct mail, especially Vigory's background, if I'm saying his last name correctly, was really kind of this no-loss guarantee strategy. He had a method and a madness behind it, but his objective was to have the best possible outcome and win. And he became well-known as kind of a political strategist or what have you and doing it. And so part of it was, I wouldn't call it embellishment, but it was just, it was over the top in some cases. You know, he was motivated because a lot of people he believed received awards like Nobel Peace Prize. Like in the case of Obama, would have driven him completely mad when he won the Nobel Peace Prize. Because here's this guy, I wouldn't even call him a statesman at this time. He had no definition of who he was. And there are people that really have given much to be recognized for their efforts with great prizes and awards and recognition like this and what have you. So he had a number of different motivating factors around his conservative nature that drove him to start a number of these direct mail houses. But getting down to it, when we come back from the break, the question was, is that, are we behind the times? And my worry is when, and this is part of the reason, when I became chairman, my eyes got wide open. I was just like many of you, where I have my favorite political figures who I believe are conservative. They're people that stand for principle, that I slap them on the back, go, yes, I'm with you. Donations, knocking doors, doing things for people, doing everything I possibly could to keep these people elected. When I became chairman, I got a different type of view. It was like one window shut and the other window opened. And when the other window opened, I was stunned, quite honestly. People that had been, not everybody, I mean, I still have my favorite conservatives that still line up and still are really fantastic, and they fight hard for the United States of America and most of all the Constitution to maintain the integrity of this great nation. But on the flip side, I found people that were just faux conservatives, and they fooled everybody, and they were doing things behind the scenes that were shocking. And quite honestly, it was disheartening. And then I start thinking about the fight, right? I want to win everything that I encounter. When I go to work, I want to have the best day. When I was chairman, I wanted to win every election for Republicans. I wanted to get the biggest red brush I could find and paint the world red because I believe in it, the principles and the values that come along with it. Why compromise anything? If there's a way to get the best outcome, then we dig in and we lean in, we fight for it. But what I found is I bumped into the industry of politics, and then I saw these people that were fakers, you know, that were leading us astray and doing things, and they were doing it for their own self-interest. Now, there's some of that everywhere we go and we encounter. But I thought for our nation, somebody that's duty-driven, this was a sickening experience. When we come back, and I tell you this little story, you might go, oh my gosh, I didn't know. Well, now you're going to know when we come back after the break.